afternoon. I think how different it would be if we didn't gather like this in the afternoon. It gives us a chance to know each other in another way. We rub elbows in the kitchen and the dining room and the bathrooms, but to sit in the zendo quietly like this and listen. So old Dogen continues. I should recognize that since this is the fourth day, is that right? Yes. Mm-hmm. It's a time when there's some tiredness that goes along with this, and sometimes some irritation as we go deeper inside, outside things that come up have a funny effect on us. Sonia, my dear friend Sonia, always said it. You start feeling like you're in the wrong place and the wrong time and the wrong people. Maybe you shouldn't be here. But it doesn't last. And it just gives us a taste of how our mind is so fickle. We don't even know our own mind. It just does its own thing. Say, okay. Right, it's the fourth day, it's the third day. So, I know we get tired. And also it's important about talking and remember that words go right through the walls in every building here. So, there's no way to hide your speech if you're talking. It goes into everybody's ears. So please remember. So now I have to remember where we were. I'll begin here. This is what Kaz calls number six. As he breaks this up, maybe I read this, but I will read it again. An ancient Buddha said, "The mountains, rivers, and earth are born at the same moment with each person. All Buddhas of the three worlds are practicing together with each person." If we look at the mountains, rivers, and earth when a person is born, his birth does not seem to be bringing forth additional mountains, rivers, and earth on top of the existing ones. Yet the ancient Buddha's word cannot be mistaken. How should we understand this? Even if you do not understand it, you should not ignore it, but be determined to understand it. Please Since there, these words are already expounded, you should listen to them. Listen until you understand. And this is how to understand. Is there anyone who knows what a person is like, its beginning or end? What a person's birth is like? No one knows either birth's end or its beginning. Nevertheless, everyone is born. Similarly, no one knows the extremities of the mountains, rivers, and earth, but all see this place and walk here. Do not think with regret that the mountains, rivers, and earth are not born with you. Understand that the ancient Buddha teaches that your birth is not separate from the mountains, rivers, and earth. Again, all Buddhas of the three worlds have already practiced, attained the way, and completed realization. How should we understand that those Buddhas are practicing together with us? First of all, examine a Buddha's practice. And emphasize this about listening. I talked about seeing yesterday and how essential and how big a part seeing is in our body mind. But listening is sometimes overlooked in our practice. We are so engaged in our engagement with things that we fail to stop long enough to really hear what is being said. It's true that spring and autumn speak at the top of their voices. And there are many, many voices in each one of them. And each of those voices is proclaiming the Dharma, is actually truly speaking exactly what is true. It's what we long to know. It's what we think is somewhere else, when in truth it's in our very ears. There's that old story of the fellow whose teacher told him that the earth is Buddha itself, and he slept beside a little stream and wrote a poem in the morning saying the sound of the stream is the sound of our Buddha's speech. We hear it, don't we? When we're attending, we hear it. We see it. Thoreau said when we encounter something, if we look at it, are we really seeing it? The truth of our practice is about engaging directly with it, whatever it is. So that there's an exchange. Not that we create a story about it or even be conscious of the exchange, but to be aware of our own awakeness, our own presence, to include whatever is before us. It's our only way to understand. It's not somewhere else. It's not in a book. It's not up on the mountain somewhere. It's not even particularly in a zendo. It's right where you are. And so there's a great deal to appreciate in hearing and seeing. And the more we hear and see, the more vivid the truth of things becomes. And the more like what we would think of as precious, like a jewel, the more we might likely call Buddha. Koban, when he came to visit, always made sure to address and appreciate whatever pet lived in that house, and always identified the pet as the bodhisattva guarding the whole family. Mm-hmm. It's a recognition of the actuality of a situation beyond the conventions, beyond the conventional way that we identify things. If we drop those conditioned views and just really look and listen to see what's there and to appreciate it, and not just the dogs and cats. It's easier with dogs and cats. Mostly we do that in our culture. Other cultures think that's crazy, but for us, that's the truth of it. And in our true wisdom is the truth of it for each other as well. And it's how we're able to live together without tearing each other limb from limb, which is always a possibility. And one of the deep mysteries and tragedies of being human, that there is that tendency in us, that tendency of ignoring the great want and suffering that is going on in the world, of not really seeing, not hearing the cries of help for help. That's how Avalokiteshvara is identified, as hearing the cries of the world. So that's the kind of understanding that Dogen is speaking about in here. It's not a truth that's the prettiness of the spring and the autumn as much as something bigger than that, something deeper than that. And yet, of course, our constant worry is how to attend to what we do see and how we can deal with the feelings that come up when we meet some kind of suffering and not know what to do about it. Our tendency is to turn away, of course. So again, it's our human nature that takes always this extra little of action, mind-body action, to overcome our turning away. It takes that extra just to be able to look at our own impulses, our own actual being, which we want to be really nice and good, And in Zazen, of course, we see everything. We see how nice and good, and we see what a mess. Coben said, "Looks like a garbage pail." The Sangha, just a garbage pail. So, the seeing and listening is crucial, absolutely crucial, on all sides and all levels. Which means we've got a lot of work to do. And it's the kind of work that brings great joy. So I recommend it to you. And I think the essence of practice is being expressed this way. Chopping down. So, comments, questions? Laura?
What's the name of the book again?
This book? It's called Moon and a Dewdrop. This is a... it's a collection of some of the Shobo Genzo talks that Dogen gave. So it's not all of them. All of them is in two fat books, this fat, in English. But this is just the sort of juicier ones, I think, that they chose for us in this little book. And then what we've been reading is in here called Only Buddha and Buddha. So, if you see Buddha, Buddha sees Buddha. There's nothing in between. And that's what it's describing in poetic language of mountains and rivers.
I have another question.
Yes, please.
Thich Nhat Hanh says, just sit. And in the last couple of years, the Dalai Lama has been saying, you need to do more than just sit. You need to be more active. What are your thoughts? It came up in our Thursday night group a couple months ago, but I'm just curious.
Well, it seems to me that there's a point where we have to just sit. That without having a really good, strong practice and developing an understanding of the other side, you could say, that it's very hard to have an effect. It's really hard to act in a wholesome way. And so that's first, and that is all the time. I mean, not from beginning to end. Zazen is essential. But once you've been sitting for a long time, it just naturally comes up to see so clearly you have to do something. You just do. And you have something to share then, because you've been sitting long enough to have encountered a great deal that you could share just out of your own rich life and practice. Nothing else, nothing special, just the wholeness of you that becomes more developed as you sit. So then you have a great deal to give. So then I think it's important to have some kind of giving practice. Right livelihood, it's one of the Eightfold Path. And that's very important. So there are a lot of people in sanghas who are feeding the poor. You know, Arcata is doing that. And working in prisons and working on the streets of cities. There's almost infinite amount of action that can be engaged in. And I think everybody should have some kind of engaged practice. I think that's what our practice is about. It's not about us. That we have to get us into line first so that we can help others to get into line. It's a good question. Thank you. Is that enough? Abby?
You spoke of tiredness. And I arrived here late from this last Zazen because I was just, at that point, so tired. I said, you know, it's not really perhaps good for me to just sit in my chair and be so sleepy. Let me sleep. So I did. But I'm wondering, as you've mentioned, it seems quite typical on day four, and I'm like a little piece of wet Kleenex, you know. Mm-hmm. Do I go back to sleep and just really sleep a while, or should I, after this talk, get back on the chair and maybe sleep in the chair?
Well, that's everybody's question. And unfortunately, in our practice, we are given the opportunity to make up our minds for ourselves. There is no Eno coming to drag you out of bed, which is the case in a lot of places. They look around and and sometimes sleepiness comes from denial of not wanting to go somewhere that the mind is wanting to go. Mm-hmm. And so it just becomes a distraction. Oh, I'm so tired. I can't sit. So trying to sort out whether it's real tiredness or just one more distraction, like sometimes the pain in the knees is a pain and sometimes it's really not. It's just another way of getting out of it.
Out of it.
Not drinking enough water can definitely cause fatigue.
That's true. Thank you. Drink more water. Yeah, in any case, drink more water, but that's absolutely right for many reasons. We are water. We're mostly water.
You asked where the Dharma kings were, and I think they're all sitting here, and we're sitting on the Dharma king too. And I wanted to thank all the Dharma kings and yourself for allowing me to join in with you. I have to go to San Francisco to give a Dharma talk tomorrow, and I'm really worried that I'm just going to give one of yours because there's so much. Every time I try, you know, I'm trying to like mentally prepare the ground, and they just, you know, so.
Well, be my guest.
All right.
But I and give them all my best.
I will. But I really wanted to say thank you for this. wonderful, wonderful practice and the chance to be with everybody. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jana. It's been a treat to, and an honor that you've joined us. Truly.
I do have one question. Where is this mind you keep talking about? You said our mind and that mind. And where's that?
Do you know?
I'm not telling.
Well, then I'm not either. Well, safe journey to San Francisco.
I was so sure she was going to say the Dharma Kings were in Scotland.
No, but I was going to offer to finish up with you with the Rumi quote. It was you that quoted Rumi yesterday, which I think I am going to use tomorrow night. But I have a cognitive problem. I have a very bad memory. So I remember the first part, and I thought you might be able to do the second part.
I can write it out for you if you like.
Well, how about out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and right doing, there is a field. I'll meet you there.
Oh, that's a lovely one. Yeah, that's a different one.
Yes, do you know the rest of them?
That's about it.
When the world lies down in the grass, in that grass.
I can't remember the rest of that. There's a man in Santa Cruz that can do books upon books of Rumi and Hafiz, and he just says it like he's the original voice. It's just incredible.
It ends with something like ideas such as you and I.
Yeah. I love that. It's that beautiful.
You were talking about listening and hearing, and it struck me that Zen does not have a big tradition of music. We don't sit around and sing Zen folk songs.
Yeah, that's true.
And most other things do, and I was just wondering why that is.
We have chanting, though. And chanting uses the same part of the brain that singing does, that music does. So I'm sure that that's the reason. It's the, what is it, the Broca... I don't know, this part behind the ear is the music part of the brain. And it's used in chanting, just like it is used in opera or anything else. Though we have done some singing, and Zen Center does some incredible songs, funny songs about the Heart Sutra. You know, there's a cowboy song about the Heart Sutra that's just a hoot.
And then they set Daishin Devani to music.
Did they?
Namankara Tanatara Ya Ya Ya.
There you go.
Yeah. Why not? And who knows, Coben always said, we're inheriting all this stuff that's coming to us from long ago and far away. And each time it goes to a new world, it gets transformed. So who knows what we're going to transform it into. Already it's undergone a few small changes. And it'll undergo a great many more before who knows what. I mean, we assume it will take root here and have its own nature. Based on the Dharma, based on the teaching, but maybe there will be music. I'd love that.
We do that as meditation in some of my groups. We had one day when we decided that we should all think of songs that were about love. So while we sat, I gave everybody permission to just sing out the first few lines of songs about love. And it was really quite wonderful.
Huh.
It directs people's minds that way.
Yes, and
we did another one about laughter. Everybody had permission during the sit to think of a good joke they knew. And then if it was really strong, they could just say it. So the whole half an hour was focused on thinking of happy things.
Uh-huh.
Not traditional.
Not at all, but who knows? We don't know where we're going.
To that Bodhidharma phase, you know.
Uh-huh. Right. Well, Kenneth Roshi was a musician, an organist, and she created hymns. And she has a whole book full of her hymns, all about Buddha. It's and in the Pure Land temples, they not only have pews, it's all set up like a church, and they have in the front of the, in the back of the front of your is a book full of hymns about Buddha, you know, instead of the baby Jesus, it's the baby Buddha. It's amazing. So, in a lot of ways, it's the same. And we all are. The Thich Nhat Hanh's group sings beautifully. They sing the Heart Sutra and all the sutras in these heavenly voices. It's really, oh, it's lovely to hear.
It's nice to have a good choir here.
Yes. Yeah, people who really know how. Yeah, it does help.
The Sufis from Santa Cruz dance to all kinds of ecstatic music, but also to Buddhist chants and so forth. And that it's involved with singing and movement and connecting with each other, which is a really beautiful way to express something beyond words, with words.
Yes. And music. Well, when we chant, the instruction is to listen to the others around you so that the whole thing is coherent. If you're just chanting out of your own sound, you don't hear others, and then it's very discordant. So the helpful thing is to just be very tuned to the whole thing that other people are doing, and then you'll find that you're oh, that's tomorrow's talk, actually. So I won't go on.
Don't give it away.
You find the person next to you that's chanting at the table and try to sound just like they sound. It's quite an experience.
Oh, gosh, I've never done that. Huh?
I used to harmonize when I first went to Zen Center until they told me we don't do that here. So.
Yeah, I bet they did.
I can remember how, what a riddle it was for me when I first started chanting with them at the CCLA. But it had a lot of really solid old chanters, and the instruction was chant with your ears.
Well, that's a good one. That's just, that's the same. It's, yeah, listen to what's going on around you, not and to yourself.
Yeah, it's like breathing through your heels. And
yes,
and chant your
ears. Well, you chant from your heels too. It comes all the way up through your body and out. It's not just this little squeaky thing. It's the whole thing. Well, tomorrow will be a different day. Every tomorrow is a different day. So In the meanwhile, enjoy this different day as long as it lasts. Thank you.
Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.
Ken. Restore. And I'd like to make a request, if I could.